This is Ozarks at Large. Nate Powell holds a pretty impressive distinction, the only cartoonist to win a National Book Award. He earned it for his work on the third book in the March trilogy based on the words of Congressman and civil rights icon John Lewis. He also earned the Robert F. Kennedy Book Award and the Coretta Scott King Award for his work on that trilogy. And he has been awarded multiple Eisner Awards, the top award in comics and graphic novels. He also happens to be a native Arkansan who grew up in Little Rock. He's releasing a new graphic novel, Come Again, that is set in the 1970s Ozarks in an intentional community. Think back to the land movement of that era. Earlier this month, he went to Comic-Con in San Diego, and Friday, he'll be in Fayetteville for a presentation at the Fayetteville Public Library at 1 and a book signing at 7 at Nightbird Books. Nate Powell now lives in Indiana, and he recently spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums. Nate says the idea for setting Come Again in an intentional community in the Arkansas Ozarks probably had its first inspiration when Nate was playing in a punk rock band as a teenager in Little Rock.
I didn't have much awareness of any real alternative communities until I got involved with, you know, Arkansas's underground punk rock community. And then as we got older into our late teens and 20s, that's when there was a little bit of a crossover there, especially as we started to know more people in Fayetteville. And then that sort of branched out, and, you know, if people grew up with older siblings and teachers, there started to be an awareness, especially with like punk hippie crossover. There was an awareness of more, you know, off the grid, back to the land communities. Yeah, really for me, it wasn't until I was well into my 20s that I was actually able to read a newspaper article or read some interviews in fanzines about back to the land people or folks who just, you know, stayed off the grid. So very little awareness in central Arkansas, but from an early age, every time I would head up to Northwest Arkansas, whether it was taking the pig trail or going up to the Buffalo River and then heading west, it was always interesting to see how there are these different clusters of towns and micro-societies that were sort of shoved together. And the fact that, you know, like within a span of, you know, two counties, you can have a very, you know, very progressive college town, have a, you know, a dastardly white supremacist haven, have a hippie, you know, crystal shopping tourist town, and have, you know, weird hills and hollers, you know, sort of stitched in between. It still sort of mystifies and amazes me to think about, I don't know, like how much more, I know diverse is an overused term these days, but that's what it is. How much more diverse the tapestry of Arkansas is than most people give it credit for.
You know, and what's interesting in Come Again is you have this community that's in one of these hills and hollers, and we're also learning about it in transition. And in fiction, transition times are always seemingly so interesting because people, whether they want to or not, are having to come to grips with change. Was that an inspiration for you?
Oh, yes, indeed. And I really, I guess in terms of writing the story, that's where the story reveals itself. I sort of, you know, to me as the writer, the story unfolded as I was trying to reverse engineer plot elements to say the bigger thing that I wanted to say. So some of the guiding interests and themes that I had that went into the book had to do with being at a crossroads as an adult, entering parenthood and entering a very solid, you know, domestic professional existence, aging out of being more actively involved in the punk community as far as art and music were concerned. And as I did that, an increasing awareness that perhaps I was ready to make some of those moves and choices years prior, but I didn't really, you know, like sometimes you're so deep into a culture or a way of life, so deep into what you're doing that you don't have a chance to look around and see that in some ways you've already moved on.
This is going to sound dismissive, and I don't. Those transitions in life sometimes or often remind me of adolescence. Exactly the way you described it is something's already changed and you didn't even realize it until, you know, you look back.
Oh, yes. And really, I think I think one of the major lessons or one of the major revelations of adulthood really is that there is no magical maturing. There's no major shift in consciousness. You know, like people should always pay attention to the parts of themselves where you're like, oh, I feel the same as when I was six or when I was 16. You know, it's because, yes, we make these arbitrary distinctions as we grow and age and change, but the arbitrary changes aren't actually changes in and of themselves. So, yeah, I agree with you.
It's like those old things they used to have, those magic pictures where you'd see one design, but if you concentrate a certain way, there's something else behind that design.
Oh, yeah, the magic eye.
Yeah, the magic eye. Bet. Yeah. It's like that.
And only by losing focus do you see what the hidden image is. Yeah. Right.
Well, and Jake, the mother in Come Again is kind of, you know, teetering through these different, not teetering even, but experiencing some of what you just talked about, don't you think?
Oh, without a doubt. I think that, yeah, Haluska, who's our protagonist, I feel like she and her best friend, Whitney, are sort of motivational foils to each other. I feel like one of the fundamental questions I was interested in exploring was basically, what do you do when you look around and the ideals that brought you to a place in life aren't exactly where your life is anymore? So for Haluska, I feel like her major situation is she's really the believer of this core friend group that brought themselves to Haven Station as young freaks. And she is still the believer. I feel like her ideals are still with this way of life in this community, but it doesn't appear to actually be working out too well for her. Yet she wants to be a part of this community and persist there. Her best friend, I feel like her heart has never been in the ideals that brought them there in the first place. She was more guided by the sense of connection and love with their friend group. You know, like many of us, when we're teenagers and young adults, it's our commitment to each other that plays such a strong role in the decisions we make. But I feel like her life is actually pretty awesome, all things considered, up in the village. But it's not something that her heart has ever been in. And I feel like there's a tension that underlies that, that sort of cuts across their commitment to each other as people and then some of the other, you know, undercover of darkness plot elements that transpire.
And I don't want to give anything away. I think we've set a pretty good stage here. You know, those of us who live in the Ozarks, of course, and I guess this happens no matter when someone writes and creates a community somewhere, we're going to come up with our own conclusions of where Haven Station is. And then, of course, there's Hallelujah Springs, which we're guessing could be inspired by another community.
Possibly.
But, you know, I was looking at it and I was thinking, well, Haven Station, to me, is what I imagined Winslow or Mountainburg to be.
I know Winslow. Yeah.
And again, that's where I heard of the first Back to the Landers that I ever heard about were around the Winslow area. Was there, and you don't have to give it away if you don't want to, was there a specific place in the Ozarks you thought of for Haven Station or just sort of that mythic Ozarks?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's definitely more mythic. If I were to make it as specific as possible, I would say that what guided me while I was building these worlds and these towns was that Hallelujah Springs, which certainly sort of embodies the spirit of your Eureka Springs. So Haven Station, you know, would be like a mythical hippie village that would probably be, you know, 2 to 4 miles uphill from the outskirts of Eureka Springs. And so I imagine it being north and west of Eureka Springs, so sort of between there and Fayetteville, but much closer to Eureka Springs.
Gotcha.
And one of the things that wasn't apparent to me until I was halfway done drawing the book was that I'm not a person who's too concerned by, quote, world building, by getting really into the nuts and bolts of what makes this you know, this reality work for the characters.
Right.
And so, you know, there are some really cool things happening in their town. But the more I was drawing and rewriting and thinking, the more I started to see holes in their little hippie village and in their way of life. Things seemed to work just a little too well, and there's a little too much leisure time involved. And, you know, I've never lived off the grid, so I don't know, but I'm taking a very good guess that, you know, that there's a lot more sweat involved than maybe depicted in the pages of my book.
It's why so many of us aren't off the grid, right?
Yes. But that actually made the story, even for me as the creator, it made it much more interesting, because then all of a sudden I realized that it's not like they're living a lie, but this particular community has come to terms with the fact that it is just uphill from a slightly larger
right.
town with more resources and more convenience, and they can get what they need, and they can continue being off the grid just as much as they like. And I guess, you know, that's something that does sort of erode what might be the harder ideals that drove some of them there. But I like that there's something just under the surface in which it's not like the community is a sham, but when I'm reading and looking at the story, it's like my own concept of what the town should be starts to have little holes poked in it. And I wonder what is up with the town at large.
Mm. I love that you're still thinking about it after it's been put to bed.
Oh, yeah, it never ends. Like, even Swallow Me Whole came out 10 years ago, and I still find little components of that that open themselves up to me, that I start thinking about in a new way. And that's, you know, a lot of it is just because, you know, writing is never perfect, and, you know, we make mistakes, but then the mistakes take on lives of their own. But, yeah, it's nice to leave things as... I don't know. You don't want to fill in too complete of a picture. You don't want to paint in every corner and every crack. And so, like, leaving narrative gaps, especially when you only, you know, you have to cut out things at a certain point. But by choosing not to focus on some elements, that gives you room to roam and wonder.
I'm speaking with Nate Powell about Come Again, his latest work. He'll be at the Fayetteville Public Library and Nightbird Books on August 3rd. You have been a collaborator. You have worked solo. This was solo again. What's that like to work solo where it's all you?
It really is like coming home in a lot of ways. Prior to Come Again, I spent the previous 5 years collaborating with the great John Lewis, congressman and civil rights icon, collaborating with him and with Andrew Iden on the March trilogy. And in a lot of ways, it required a complete rethinking of how I process information, how I interact with a script, and how I make that come alive on the page. But I did get disciplined enough and efficient enough at it that sort of became my new storytelling method. And so on and off for the duration of March, of the March trilogy, I was also working on Come Again. So I'd be writing, I would pencil 40 or 50 pages, and then I would, you know, throw it back in the pile and decide it wasn't ready yet. When the dust finally settled and I had nothing to do but return to this graphic novel, it was nice to finally kind of be left to play, I guess. And I guess I benefited by focusing a lot on narrative clarity during March, necessarily so, having to kind of condense a massive amount of information and move along plot while being beholden to historical accuracy. So kind of taking those lessons and then being totally set free again was really fantastic. And being able to work in a new visual style, I had never really worked with second and third color layers on top of black ink and gray washes before. So, you know, from the very first page, it was nice because I didn't exactly know what I was doing. And so it was just a real delight. Like, I spent, you know, 600 pages straight just working in one style. And I learned a lot along the way, got a lot faster. I became a better draftsperson. But it was nice, once again, to just be set free and be like, oh, I get to play again at the drawing table.
When you're working with someone's words, like Congressman John Lewis, the civil rights monument of a man, and you're working with his words, is it intimidating to go back to your words, or is it empowering?
It actually helped me a lot. By having to stick to Congressman Lewis's voice, and when speaking of voice here, we're really talking about author's voice, I had to check myself early on in the March trilogy. In March Book 1, I was fairly heavy-handed in my going ahead and marking up the script and trying to apply the show-don't-tell rule of storytelling, which is especially important in comics, being a visual medium. But, I don't know, I had never worked with a writer before whose primary source for their writing was from the oral tradition. As somebody who's been, who's been telling these stories in front of people for decades and decades, speaking in a certain way, it took me a little while to actually respect the sanctity of his voice. So I had to kind of go back and rework my comics to fit his specific voice. But once I became accustomed to that and I realized where these guidelines and parameters were in which we could find a narrative balance, it was nice. I got to really like hear his words in my mind as I was putting them on the page, as I was lettering them and finding visuals to go around them. And for Come Again, the previous original graphic novel I did, Any Empire, I really was aiming for a lot more clarity than my previous work. So I took almost all of the voiceovers out of the book. And looking back, I regret that. So I was waiting and waiting to return to Come Again, especially after the voiceovers contained in the March trilogy. And I was really ready to embrace voiceover again. When I read fiction, I love a first-person, limited perspective that's not there present with the storytelling, but that is not omniscient. And so, yeah, it was just a real joy to kind of synthesize my love of literature with my admiration and sort of my growth through telling Congressman Lewis's story in March.
Is it a joy to let something like Come Again emerge into the world for the rest of us to see after it's been in your studio for so long?
Oh, yes. And this is one of these things where I've had copies of the book for a couple of weeks now, and only in the last few days has it become real to me that the book actually exists and that it's available for other people who I don't necessarily know. And that's always kind of an incremental awareness anytime I come out with any new story of any length. Come Again has been with me for so many years that I feel like, tomorrow morning I'm headed to San Diego Comic Con, and that's the first time I'm ever going to personally sell a copy to someone. It's the first time I'm going to get a chance to talk to someone in person about the book. And so each one of those interactions helps kind of underline that the work is a part of the world now. Yeah, but it is a delight. I'm happier with my work on this book than I am with anything else I've ever been involved in terms of the comics output.
That's a great place to be.
Thank you.
When you're at the Fayetteville Library, you'll be doing a slideshow that's associated with Come Again. So you'll be discussing some of the particular panels and work?
Yeah, more or less. I wanted to sort of give a visual tour that would factor in my personal interests that sort of led through the nascent creation of the book and sort of piecing together what would be disparate concepts, and then sort of the way that creative process overlaps throughout March. It even gets as far as, taking the implosion of the peace movement and sort of pre-punk, post-hippie experiments, from England all the way across America, the Sex Pistols' ill-fated tour of the American South in 1978 plays a part in it, Atari 2600, graphics and art play a strange role. I do some explorations, like the colors chosen and some of my storytelling decisions. Like I have a color coding system, and I use negative space, both black and white, in a particular way to convey information non-verbally. So I kind of get into some of the nuts and bolts of my storytelling style, which extends beyond Come Again as well.
Nate Powell, thank you so much for your time. We look forward to your visit.
Well, thank you. I look forward to being there.
Nate Powell is a winner of the National Book Award, and his new graphic novel is Come Again, set in the Arkansas Ozarks. He'll deliver a presentation about the book Friday afternoon at 1 at the Fayetteville Public Library, and also discuss the book and sign copies at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville Friday night at 7. His website is seemybrotherdance.org. He spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums earlier this month.